the business news of the nation, region, and the greater Des Moines Metro made possible through the support of Creamer Law Firm. Business law and estate planning, visit creamerlaw.com. And AARP of Iowa, real possibilities for our community and our citizens, no matter the age, aarp.org.
Hey, welcome back to the Business News Hour. With us in studio is Sam Creamer from the Creamer Law Firm. We're going to be talking about some juicy stuff today. It's about divorce. Well, not necessarily that kind of a divorce. Well, Sam, welcome back to the Business News Hour.
Thank you, Michael. It's good to be here.
So what are we talking about when we're talking about divorce?
Well, we're not so much talking about divorce specifically as we're really talking about disentanglement.
Disentanglement.
What I'm here to talk about today is what happens when co-owners of a business need to disentangle. What happens when the party's over and that they need to get separated? In effect, they need a business divorce.
You know, lots of people spend lots of time not only formulating these companies, but also working at them.
You will spend more of your working hours in your owner-managed or closely held business than you will anywhere else. It's more time than you spend with your family. It's more time than you spend with your friends. So if you have a co-owner in that business with you, it's very much like family. It's very much like a marriage. So then the question becomes, what happens when problems arise? Mm-hmm. Problems can arise in several different areas, but one of the biggest areas they arise in is commitment. On previous episodes of your show, I've talked a little bit about how commitment is the one indispensable element of success. And by that, I mean, you can't succeed just because you are committed. I mean, it's certain you will fail if you are not committed. The level of commitment that someone has to their business could be the hours they spend. It could be the money they put in. And if you've got two co-owners, sometimes this becomes a asymmetrical type of relationship where one feels they're putting in much more time than the other, or one feels they're putting in much more money, and problems can arise. A second way problems can arise is if the business itself isn't doing well. This could be due to lack of sales, could be due to unintended expenses. It could be due to a number of factors. Rosy optimism, which is what people have when they form a business.
Oh, sure. Everybody's, this is going to be wonderful. And I've known you forever.
Known you forever, and we're best friends forever, and this is what we've always wanted to do. But by the same token, it turns out that reality can sometimes be different. John Lennon taught us that life's what happens while you're making other plans.
So when we're formulating this business, is it wise then, Sam, to have some kind of an exit strategy? I mean, that sounds like throwing water on the party, so to speak. But what do we do?
Essentially, the two options are either you plan for a disentanglement or a disentanglement happens. Now, a disentanglement could happen virtually by someone dying who is a co-owner of the business. That's a form of disentanglement. But then you've got the problem, what happens with their estate? What happens with the heirs? What happens when someone who is significantly less experienced than the surviving co-owner wants to come in and tell the co-owner how to run the business? These are problems. Well, what can be done about these problems? Really, there's two aspects of the solution to the problem. One aspect is a statutory or legal solution, and the second aspect is arguably a negotiated disentanglement.
And I would suspect that the judicial decision is far more expensive than the other?
It's more expensive, and there's an old adage that divorce never forms money. Accordingly, the real problem with using the statute is that it's sort of a sledgehammer approach to a fly problem. Not that disentangling is a fly problem, but the point is it's so much stronger. The statute basically provides that a company can be dissolved in the event the co-owners simply cannot continue to coexist. Now, it's got to be a little bit more than just disliking each other. It's got to be something that causes something of a paralysis in the business, that the business can no longer really function efficiently. It has to be something where one owner can fairly effectively point to, inappropriate acts on behalf of the other co-owner. It's got to be something that really causes the business to be at a standstill. It's not just, you know, I think we really should fire Joe.
So it's got to show some harm. Is that it?
There has to be some definitive harm.
Mm-hmm.
The statute, again, I suggested that it's a sledgehammer to a fly situation. I refer to as the Samson option. And many of our listeners realize that, you know, Samson pushed the walls of the temple out, the temple fell down and killed everyone within. And that's a little bit like what the statute is, because the statutory remedy is to dissolve the company.
Ouch.
And the dissolution of a company can be ugly on so many levels. One level it could be ugly on is it could lead to a fire sale of assets. I mean, that's obviously a time when the vultures come in to pick the bones. Another way it could be ugly is there could be some non-divisible assets, a name of a company, a phone number, a location, which really the parties can't distribute amongst them. One of them has to wind up with it rather than both. Accordingly, a dissolution can be a really tough, ugly thing. And quite honestly, it's a bit of a black mark against the credit of both parties.
Well, because this is all happening very publicly, too.
It's happening publicly and it's happening economically. Most of the time when these problems occur, there is some outstanding debt.
Mm.
Dissolving a company does not dissolve the debt. And just because you may no longer be a co-owner of the business does not mean you're not a co-borrower on the business's indebtedness. Another issue can be that the two co-owners simply can't work together anymore. And one decides, you know, I've just got to fire that other person. They're just awful in so many ways. Well, you can fire them possibly, but that doesn't mean you get to take away their stock. And accordingly, you could wind up with a very angry former employee who is also still a co-owner. Again, things that can be done are dissolution of the company, or now we can talk a little bit about how you can disentangle yourselves through negotiation.
A planned disentanglement.
A planned disentanglement. Earliest in this broadcast, we talked about how a business separation, disentanglement, is similar to a divorce. The best time to plan for a divorce is when you're still in love. And many people who have suffered through a divorce recognize that the second time or perhaps the third time, they want a prenuptial agreement. Well, the business equivalent of a prenuptial agreement is a buy-sell agreement. And that's something that could be negotiated when the parties are still happy with each other, when they're thinking about what is going to be the future of the business, when they're looking for an exit strategy. A buy-sell agreement is an agreement that the parties reach voluntarily. Now, voluntary and voluntary is not always,
voluntaries, yeah.
Not always so voluntary. So one of the things that happens is in the absence of a prearranged buy-sell agreement, a prearranged way to get out of the entanglement, is one will say to the other, if you don't stop this, I'm going to dissolve the company. I'm going to go to the Samson option. And the survivor wants to say, no, don't do that. Let's see how we work something out. So one of the benefits of having a statute like this, which is so, I'm going to call it punitive, is it gives an extortion value to the party that wants to get out.
Because nobody wants to pull the rug, right?
Nobody wants to.
The pain has got to be.
And everybody's willing to.
Yeah, right.
And accordingly, that's why you want to negotiate a buy-sell agreement at such time as the parties are getting along just fine. They're thinking about the future. They're thinking about exit strategies. They're thinking about the what if. Now, buy-sell agreements come in all flavors, shapes, and sizes. Oftentimes, they provide for what happens if one of the parties dies so that the surviving party doesn't have to either dissolve the business or figure out how to get rid of a surviving family member that they don't want to be in business with. That's fine. Sometimes, less often, they deal with things like disability or retirement. Mm. What happens if one of the co-owners gets sick? Now, that's a two-edged sword because the co-owner who gets sick is normally also somebody who's been working in the business.
They're still going to need the income, and yeah, sure.
They need the income, and by the same token, they're important to the business. So one of the things that has to be contemplated is whether the business needs insurance to cover for the interim costs of replacing the deceased or disabled co-owner. But, Michael, the part that's most commonly overlooked in fairly well-drafted buy-sell agreements is what happens if the parties just don't want to be together anymore. They don't have a provision in them, oftentimes, for how to just disentangle a situation that's no longer working. In the buy-sell agreements that we draft and we recommend, you'll see that there are all kinds of provisions for that. I mean, sometimes we do what's called a put and a call. A put means that if somebody wants out, they can say, all right, I want out and you buy me out. A call is, I've had it with you, I'm buying your interest. The important thing on that is that there be a formula, that there be a recognized way for them to disentangle financially. Because in the absence of a recognized way to disentangle, one or the other will basically say, no, I'm not going to do that. And unless there are triggers in the buy-sell agreement to force those types of situations, then the buy-sell agreement won't be efficacious. Now, it's important to note that buy-sell agreements are contracts. And contracts sometimes are subject to interpretation. There have been cases where the buy-sell agreements have been either so outdated or so egregious that the courts won't approve them. Accordingly, what we recommend to clients who are contemplating a buy-sell agreement is that there be some type of flexible formula for determining the price. That flexible formula could be an appraisal. That flexible formula could be some type of relationship to book value with some adjustment for appreciated. I mean, these are not, you know, three-page documents that you pull off LegalZoom. Although, if you want to pull it off LegalZoom, that's great. We will certainly assist you in fixing that. But the thing that's important is that you contemplate how this is all going to work at a time when you're not angry. The worst time to negotiate is when the parties are angry or under duress.
And that seems to be perhaps more frequent than what we'd like to think.
It's not that it's more frequent than what you like to think. It's just the default. The default is, let's be angry. The default is, let's dissolve the company. And if we don't dissolve the company, then I want an extortion value. And it, again, divorce does not create money. Dissolution does not create value normally.
In your experience, Sam, are individuals who have been once burned, twice shy on these kinds of things, and do they then insist on some type of a buy-sell agreement?
Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. Oftentimes, when someone's been in a co-ownership situation that goes really south, they basically say to themselves, I will no longer ever have another partner, and therefore they don't need a buy-sell agreement. On the other hand, many people who are not airline pilots get to learn from their mistakes, and they can then redo the second time, the third time, with some consideration for what's going to happen in the back end.
I think one of the things you said that really explains this so well, and you used the idea of a prenuptial agreement. You know, those are relatively common for individuals who have been through it before, and it lays down in very certain terms what goes and what stays and who gets what. It would make sense, I would think, that the same would be true for a business.
That's correct. However, I will also tell you that I've had a situation where two people came in. They were forming a business, and I was talking to them a little bit about buy-sell agreements. And honest to goodness, these two people started to fight.
Right,
and
there?
They started to argue over what was to be in the agreement and how much they were going to get. And it's, you don't want to split up a pie that doesn't exist yet. You don't want to plan for a problem. On the other hand, it was a wonderful example of why they shouldn't be in business together, and they ultimately did not open
That was my
together.
Next question. Did they go into business together? No, not so much. That's what happens sometimes when you get in the conference room and you have the conversation. Sam, thank you so much.
Thank you for this opportunity.
When the party is over, we're talking about divorce in the legal sense and in the business sense with Sam Creamer from the Creamer Law Firm. Good stuff, as always, sir. Thanks.
Thank you for letting me be here.
All right. We're going to step aside, find out what happened today on Wall Street. I can tell you it was a shocking day, and we'll have those numbers when the Business News Hour continues.